You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's TicketKing.com.
Let's talk in Pack.
No clever intro needed here. You ready for part two? Let's did this. And with that, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Lemps Talk and Pack. I am your host, Chris Lempesis, coming to you once again from my basement Packer room. In my home in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here to close out my two-part series, looking back on the season that just was for the Green Bay Packers, but one that also looks ahead to the off-season that will be. That's right, I'm back, coming to you live on Championship Sunday night. The AFC title game just ended a little while ago, with the Chiefs defeating the Bengals in the nightcap, locking in a Chiefs-Eagles Super Bowl in Glendale, Arizona in 2 weeks from now. Both KC and Philly making it as the number one seeds in their respective conferences. So apparently home field advantage throughout the playoffs matters. Unless you're the Green Bay Packers. Then you gag anyways. 2 years in a row. 2 years in a row they had the number one seed. Home field advantage throughout. Zero Super Bowl appearances to show for it. Unbelievable. But I digress. And right off the bat, I want to say sorry for the delay on getting this up. I know I said at the end of part one, an episode that examined the offense, hope you all enjoyed that, by the way, that this would be available towards the middle or end of last week. Well, last week was a hell of a week for your boy at his actual job, and I just never had the proper time to prepare this episode. And since I shall serve no fries before their time, things were delayed a few days. Chris, a Fast Times at Ridgemont High reference? Really? Oh yeah, baby. But here I am now, and I am ready to go with part two, where I'll take a look back at the defense and special teams, an episode that I hope you'll find to be awesome, totally awesome. Lance, another one? Sorry, I couldn't help myself. I'll spare you any Aaron Rodgers speculation for this episode, for the most part, other than to say right now, yes, I still think he's going to be traded, and it sure looks like it's going to be the New York Jets. Yeah, it definitely feels that way. Look, just real quick. I know Nathaniel Hackett did some nice things as offensive coordinator in Green Bay, but last year for him in Denver as head coach was such a disaster. I mean, he didn't even make it through the full year. For the Jets to take a risk on hiring a guy like that, you don't do that unless you're quite sure Aaron Rodgers is coming. You just don't. Because if you hire Hackett and you end up with, say, Derek Carr, and the whole thing goes shithouse next season, guess what? Hackett's probably going to be fired, but so is Robert Saleh, the head coach. So is Joe Douglas, the general manager. Right? Woody Johnson, the owner, is probably just going to clean house. You don't make a move like that. It's too risky unless you think Rodgers is coming. So, yep, that's sure how that whole thing looks to me as of now. Okay, now I'm done. Before we get into the fun, and God, I hope you're having fun already. How could you not be? I'm quoting Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I'm talking about past Packers playoff disappointments. Is this fun? Hey, you know what, though? Really quick, the 49ers lost. Yeah. If you don't follow on Twitter, I went on a nice little rant about the 49ers after when it was pretty clear they were going to lose that game to Philadelphia today. Can I just say quick, fuck them? It drives me nuts. I'm guessing I'm not alone on this, and based on the Twitter replies I got, I know I'm not. that they're always looked at as this, like, model franchise. Ooh, Jim Harbaugh. Ooh, he's got Vic Fangio. Ooh, Kyle Shanahan. Ooh. Ooh, yeah, they're so far ahead of everybody else in what they're doing. Yeah, except for winning Super Bowls. They haven't won one since 1995. The 94 season. So winter of 95. We've won two since then. And what do we get as Packer fans? We get Barstool making a super cut of all the times the Packers have been eliminated from the playoffs. I don't even know how far back. It at least went as far back as the year after they won Super Bowl 45. It might have even gone back further than that. Why don't you make one of those for San Francisco? Why don't you make, here's one, why don't you make a super cut of all the Super Bowls San Francisco's won in the last 27 years? Oh, wait, you couldn't because the video would be 0 seconds long. It drives me nuts that they're looked at as this, like, model franchise. They're always so far ahead of everybody else. And the Packers are looked at as, like, a bunch of dumb rednecks who wasted Aaron Rodgers. Right? Wasted his career. That just really pisses me off. So I went on a nice little rant about it. It's pretty vulgar. I won't get as vulgar here on the show. I'm trying to work on that. But, yeah. It made me feel good. And I seemed to make a lot of other people feel good. So that was fun. Anywho, now I have to do the shameless self-promotion, which I know you love at the very least. Tolerate Twitter. Lemps, MKE, at It's Just Chris Now. You follow me there. You can see all my vulgar rants about the San Francisco 49ers and a lot of other things. So, yeah. Facebook, Old Bag of Donuts, OL Bag of Donuts. The email, Old Bag of Donuts, OL Bag of Donuts at gmail.com. Kyle, who used to have Twitter, got rid of it. Got it back, got rid of it again. I know you emailed me last week. I completely forgot. I'm going to write you back. Thank you for sending me that nice email. I'm going to send you something. I'm writing back soon. Don't worry. If you have it, and for anybody else out there, if you have any thoughts on, you know, the offseason, the Aaron Rodgers stuff, anything Packer related, send it along. I'd love to hear it. oldbagofdonuts@gmail.com. For anyone listening on the Wonderful Packers Talk iTunes page, leave a rating, 5 stars. Me like you those the most. 4 stars are good too. Maybe I haven't gotten a comment forever. So I don't know if anybody's ever going to leave one again. But if you want to, you can. That'd be nice if it's positive. You can find us on Spotify by searching for Packers Talk, looking for our logo, which is the head of the Vince Lombardi statue, which sits outside Lambeau Field. If you've subscribed there on Spotify, you can leave a rating. Right at the top, there's a little box with a star. Click on it. 5 stars. Come on. Don't be a dick. We're on the iHeartRadio app. You can find us there as well. And if you listen on a platform I don't mention, as always, please let me know. I'd love to hear it. And just subscribe. Just subscribe, man. Then you don't have to search. It's there. You know, you'll wake up Monday morning. I'm right there on your phone. And as usual, I don't tell anybody what's on your phone. Whatever you have on there, my lips are sealed. I'm not going to say anything. Promise. And a special shout out to our wonderful sponsor, Ticket King. For all your future Packers ticket needs, head to their website, theticketking.com. They'll take care of you. And they do other stuff. You want to get concert tickets? You want to go to a Milwaukee Bucks game? Giannis just dropped a 50-burger tonight. That was awesome. I had the split screen going. I had the AFC Championship game on one half, Bucks Pelicans on the other. Giannis was lighting it up. It was awesome. You want to go to a Bucks game? They take care of your ticket needs for that, too. TheTicketKing.com. Okay. Now that we done got all that out the way, let's go. Let's dive right in. Let's talk about, hoy vey, this Packers defense and special teams. First, a quick overview of the defense. No other way to say it. The group wildly underperformed last season. A whole lot of Packers fans, most Packers fans, really almost all Packers fans, expected this group to be one of the league's best last season. I know I was definitely hyping them up all last offseason, last summer, throughout training camp. It's going to be a top 5 defense, at worst, a top 8 defense, you know, top 25% of the league, said it over and over again. Felt like the talent was there. Felt like Joe Barry was the right man for the job. Felt like it was all gelling. It was all going to come together. And snake eyes on that roll, huh? The Packers finished 17th in yards allowed per game, tied for 17th in points allowed per game, and 26th in rushing yards allowed per game. Yikes. Now, they were 6th in passing yards allowed per game, so that's good. And only 10 teams had more takeaways than them, which isn't bad either. But, as I take a drink of water for dramatic effect, this was a group that struggled to get off the field when it needed to. Time and time again. And a group that consistently got beat by the same stuff. As defensive coordinator Joe Barry was far too stubborn to adjust far too often. Saw it in week one against Minnesota, never really got that much better, right? Some late season flashes against bad and or concussed quarterbacks. Frankly, should not have been enough to save his job, and yet somehow it was. I'm sitting here now, I can't even believe he's going to get a third year running this defense. With what he's done, unbelievable. I'll tell you what, if this defense is bad again next year, Barry will be out of a job. And head coach Matt LaFleur, Matty could very well be on the hot seat because he stuck by Barry. Yeah, that's the risk he's taking here. I don't get it. We won't know that for a while, of course, so let's instead focus on looking back. And let's start with the defensive line. Okay, so let's start here with the guys I know are going to be back next year, the headliner, Kenny Clark. Kenny had a good season. Played all 17 games, 53 tackles, 4 sacks, second year in a row with 4. 5 tackles for loss, 10 QB hits, 17 pressures. He certainly wasn't bad. But you know, I gotta say, for the first time in his career, really, I walked away feeling disappointed by his overall performance. Yeah. You know, I said all last summer and throughout camp, I felt like this was going to be the Kenny Clark year. You know, the one that we'd be talking about in 10 years from now, the year where he really asserted himself as one of the dominant D linemen in the game, felt like it was all, you know, it was all heading towards that point for him. And that just didn't happen, you know. Looked like it might early in the season. Water went down the wrong pipe. Don't you hate when that happens? Looked like it might early in the season because he came out of the gates hot. But then his play started to really tail off after that first month or so, I thought. Culminating in a long stretch around, you know, Thanksgiving or whatever, where he totally disappeared. I mean, I was making milk carton jokes about him on the show. Now, he was better down the stretch, but for a player of his caliber, with his level of salary, he just can't disappear like he did. Can't happen. Cap number of about $23 million next season. Salary of about $13 million. Expect Green Bay to convert a big chunk of that into a signing bonus to clear some much-needed cap space. And hopefully Kenny will be a little more consistent next season. Frankly, they need him to be. We move on now to Devontae Wyatt, the first-round pick out of Georgia. Much to the chagrin of a large part of the fan base, didn't see the field much for the first, I'd say, about two-thirds of the season. But when he finally got into the rotation, started to show more and more as the season went on why the Packers used such a high pick on him. Wyatt showed real explosion off the snap. Real eye-opening explosion at times. Showed some real hustle, was disruptive against both the run and the pass. Finished with 15 tackles, 1.5 sacks, 1 forced fumble, and 3 quarterback hits. He figures to see a huge bump in playing time in 2023. And I'm really excited. I'm excited about Wyatt can become. You know, I think the sky's the limit for this kid. You know, and he turns 25 in March already, so yeah, the future's now for him. It's got to happen now. TJ Slayton, another guy I'm pretty excited about. The massive 6'4", 330-pounder made a nice little jump in year two. He looked quicker, and this is big. He appeared to be playing lower than he did as a rookie, which you love to see. Finished with 31 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 2 passes defended. So the stats they're not obviously overwhelming or anything. But he was just much more noticeable this past season, right? In a good way. You noticed him affecting run plays, making it easier for other guys to get to the ball carrier. You noticed him collapsing the pocket more, or helping collapse it more at times. I like where he's heading. I don't know if he'll ever be a great player, but I think he can be a very solid starter. Yeah. I like where he's heading, and I think he'll be in line for an even bigger role in 2023. Yeah, good stuff. So those three are going to be back next year, right? That I know. Toss in Jonathan Ford, the mammoth 6'5", 338-pound 7th-round pick out of the U last season, and you have 4 guys. Now, Ford didn't play at all last year, but I feel like he'll at least get a shot to crack the rotation to some extent, at least as a depth guy. So, 4. We move on to guys now who are impending free agents. Will Jerron Reed be back? It's a very interesting question. Now, I'll admit, I whiffed on Reed a little. I did. I said during the preseason I thought he'd be this year's version of Devondre Campbell. You know, the guy they signed off the street late in the offseason for nothing, or later in the offseason for nothing, who comes in and makes a massive difference. Obviously, that didn't happen. That doesn't mean Reed didn't have a solid season, though, because I thought he did. Played all 17 games, 52 tackles, 2.5 sacks, 1 fumble force, 2 fumble recoveries, and his 14 QB hits, you might be surprised to know, were second on the team behind only Preston Smith. You know, he had some real moments, like that Miami game on Christmas. God, he was fantastic. But he did disappear for stretches also. He turned 30 in December, played last year on a 1-year, $3.25 million contract. And with Green Bay's cap situation, I'm just not sure they'll be able to pay him that for 2023. But my guess is he's going to want a salary in that neighborhood again, yeah. Because I think he's about that level of player. Maybe a little less, maybe about a $3 million a year player. My guess is he signs elsewhere, unfortunately. So I wouldn't mind. If they can make it work somehow, I wouldn't mind having him back. Yeah. Because I think he's a solid player. We come now to Dean Lowry. Oh, Dean, Lowry. You know, in some ways, this might sound weird, but I kind of feel bad for Lowry. You know, he'd had a solid first few seasons. Green Bay viewed him as an ascending player, and so they offered him, you know, the 3-year, $20 million extension in the summer of 2019. I mean, what was he supposed to do, say no? So we took it. That's what we would all do. We take it. And clearly that deal was a mistake by the Packers. Because I don't think Lowry's a bad player, not at all. Certainly had some stretches where he played damn fine football after signing that extension. But he was also, you know, definitely not worthy of such a deal. That's obvious. He was especially bad this past season, I thought, posting just a half a sack in 15 games. Oh, my God. He was also, you know, it's more than just numbers. He was pushed around a lot. You see, you get bullied a lot by opposing offensive lines far too often, on the ground far too often. He went on IR with a calf injury late in the year, and I'd be shocked. Shocked. Like, eat a shoe shocked if he's back in Green Bay. Fare thee well, sir. So, 4D linemen, who I'm sure will be back, and Reed is a maybe. So Green Bay, right, will need to fill at least one spot here, maybe two this offseason. I imagine the Packers will look to draft a couple of guys here, and if they do, man, you know, I feel like I've said this on the show. I feel like I say this every year. After the season's over, you know, especially going into the draft. Don't you just want to see them draft an absolute fucking monster? I mean, a big, large, strong human being who is hard to move. A guy that they can plug in the middle of the line. Don't you want that? Aren't you dying to see that? Right? Give me Gilbert Brown. Give me Grady Jackson. You know? Give me BJ Raji. I need it. One guy I've got my eye on. It's early for me with the draft stuff. But one guy I've kind of been keeping an eye on is Baylor's, I gotta say this right, Siaki Ika. 6'4", 357 pounds. Oh! 357 pounds. Good motor, good off the line. Wouldn't you just love a guy like that? Don't you think that would make things so much easier for Kenny and Wyatt and Slayton, and especially the linebackers behind him, Quay and Devondre? You know, I would. Now, they'd probably have to use a first-round pick or trade up to the top of round 2 to get him. But, you know, he may be worth it, especially if they, you know, they trade Rodgers and they have multiple picks in that first round. Maybe. Just saying. Okay. Burp, got to keep it real. Oh, double burp. Really real. Okay. Moving on now to the linebackers. Let's move back a level. Let's start with the outside guys, right? We got to begin with Rashawn Gary. I'm still stinging over him blowing his knee out against Detroit in Week 9. I really am. He already had 6 sacks at that point and was just proving to be a wrecking ball against both the run and the pass, you know? I really believe he was on his way to a Defensive Player of the Year caliber season. I don't know if he would have won the award, but I think he was a guy who was on pace to finish in that top 3 or 4 in voting. Oh, yeah. And an extension this offseason that would have been well north of $20 million a year. That was all on the horizon for him. He's likely not going to get that contract now, at least not right now. Green Bay will probably want to see how his knee looks before paying him, kind of like the Packers did with Elgton Jenkins this past season. But, you know, Gary's only 25 years old, should be back. He'll probably be a pup guy, I would think, to start the year, so probably back by week 7 or week 8. But I have no doubt he'll pick up where he left off. None. No, I'm still every bit as excited about Rashawn Gary as I was. Absolutely. And with Gary out for the year, it was Preston Smith who ended up leading the team in sacks with 8.5. QB hits with 20 and tackles for loss with 9. Preston, I mean, look, I don't really have a ton to say about him. You know, really thought he turned in a very solid, solid season. Thought he brought a lot of energy and hustle to the table. You know, pretty consistently. Continues to show what a nice free agent signing that was by Goot back in 2019. Other than the one COVID year in 2020 when he was far too heavy. Otherwise, he's been great. You know, it's been, you know, everything you could have asked for. Some have suggested he could be a cap casualty this offseason, but I don't see it. Not at all. My guess is Green Bay converts his $7.5 million roster bonus into a signing bonus, spreads that out over the rest of his contract, and he sticks around for at least one more year. You know, because, you know, we don't know when Gary's going to be back. We think he'll be back by midway through the season, but who knows? And I think, now here's a guy I think will be around for quite a while, and that's Kingsley Enagbare. The fifth rounder out of South Carolina had, I think, a really, really strong rookie season. Finished with 31 tackles, 3 sacks, 8 QB hits, and 3 passes defended. You know, and he didn't really play on that much early in the season, so those numbers look even better. He got better and better as the season went on and showed he could be a difference maker kind of all over the field, right? Could play the run, could obviously get after the quarterback, but he also could play the pass. Some nice moments in coverage from him. I liked that pick at the time, you know. Said on the show, I think I said it was like a sneaky good pick. I continue to feel really good about it. Yeah, nothing but good. Now, I'm not sure Kingsley will ever be a consistent starter. But I do feel like he'll definitely be a very valuable number 3 edge guy, right? A very valuable rotational guy. Only a matter of time on that. Yeah. Yeah, I like it. And if you can get your number 3 edge rusher, who's a good player in the 5th round, I mean, you're doing well. Another guy I kind of like as a potential rotational guy is Justin Hollins. Now, claimed him off waivers from the Rams in late November. Hollins has 2.5 sacks and 4 QB hits in just 6 games with the Pack. Showed real burst off the edge at times. I was really impressed, I have to say. I kept saying during the games, I kept going, man, why did Ellie let this guy go? Like, what the hell? Just turned 27. He's a free agent now, of course. And I do hope the Packers can figure out a way to get him back. Here's the thing. Pass rushers are always in high demand. And his late season play for Green Bay, that might be enough to win him a bigger deal elsewhere. It wouldn't surprise me. Love to see him back, but I kind of have my doubts that'll happen. Eric Wilson is also an impending free agent. He's a valuable special teams guy. More on him in a little bit. And Jonathan Garvin probably figures to be in the mix next year as a reserve yet again. This is definitely a spot I think Green Bay could target and target high in the draft. Having a strong pass rush, right, always a key to having a good team after all, right? You look at what Reddick did for Philadelphia today in the NFC Championship game, especially in that first half. Oh, my God, he was all over the place. You know, you look at what Chris Jones is a monster. But you look at what he did for KC in the AFC game. I mean, it's key, right? You can never have enough guys like that. And with Preston likely entering his last year in Green Bay, if he does indeed return, which I think he will, I could see Goot wanting to find Gary a true running mate for the future. Because like I said, I don't think that's Enagbare. I think he's probably a number 3 guy. I've seen some people say it's a top need. I'm not going to go that far. I said on the last episode that getting more playmakers at the skill position spots on offense is the top need, and I stand by that. That is priority number 1. But if they did go edge rusher high, one name you're already seeing linked to Green Bay a lot is Iowa's Lucas Van Ness. Now, I like Van Ness. And Iowa, as a Gopher alum, I certainly, who hates Iowa, we hate Iowa. But hey, they crank out pretty good pros. And I like Ness. I think he's got some potential. I do wonder a little bit about his overall athleticism. It's going to be very interesting to see how he tests. As we know, the Raz score is king in Green Bay. Okay, we move inside now. First name to talk about, my guy, Sky Uma. University of Minnesota, Devondre Campbell. Now, I love Devondre. We all know this. But no nice way to say it, sadly. He took a step back last year after his first year in Green Bay, 2021, a year that saw him voted All-Pro. Finished with 96 tackles, 50 less than the year before. Granted, he did miss four games last season with injury after playing in all 16 in 2021, but still. Or 16? Yeah, all 16 games. 16 or 17, whatever. No sacks, no forced fumbles after having two of each in 2021, and only one QB hit after having six the year before. But it was more than the numbers, right? He just... I hate to say this. He just didn't seem as interested in contact this year, did he? After signing the massive new contract with Green Bay last offseason. Like, I'm not trying to say he got soft. I don't know. I'm just saying he didn't seem as interested. That seemed pretty clear watching the games. His tackling was just way off. His lack, he just didn't seem as interested in getting in there and getting dirty, getting his hands dirty. You know, missed way more tackles this year than he did the year before. Now, it could have just been a down year. But even I got to admit, even I wondered at times last year if this wasn't just a one-hit wonder situation. Let's hope not. I expect his $3 million roster bonus to be turned into a signing bonus to create some much-needed cap space. And if he doesn't bounce back next year, he could find himself on thin ice in Green Bay. Again, I hate saying that, but that's the way it is. That's the way I think it could be. Going from the vet to the youngster, let's talk about Quay Walker. Whew. Whew. Let me say that again. There's a lot happened with Quay Walker this year, didn't it? Finished with 121 tackles, 3 forced fumbles, both team highs. He also had 1.5 sacks and 7 passes defended. Okay, let's start with the positives. Right? Because your boy Lamps is all about keeping it positive. Quay at times showed a level of freakish athleticism. We haven't seen an inside linebacker in Green Bay since, well, who's counting? He showed he can explode into the backfield, get after running backs and quarterbacks alike. Came off the edge at times, showing real versatility. There's absolutely potential for greatness with Quay. I want to stress that. But, and this is a big but, he was also out of position at times. Showed a glaring lack of awareness at times. And, look, the penchant for personal foul penalties and ejections is, frankly, it's fucking inexcusable. Inexcusable. This kid has all the talent you could ever ask for. And again, he could very well become great. Wouldn't surprise me. How great? Well, that's going to be up to Quay Walker to decide. Yeah. We move on to the backups now. Isaiah McDuffie, second-year guy, had a nice preseason. Got increased playing time as a result of Campbell's injury. I thought he did about as well as you could expect. 43 tackles, 1 fumble recovery. Looked solid at times, kind of lost at others. But no real issues in my opinion. I don't think he'll ever be a starter, but he's a fine backup. Chris Barnes, the other major backup there, dealt with some injury stuff. Only played in 6 games. His numbers plummeted as a result, finishing with only 29 tackles and 1 sack. He had 81 tackles the year before. Still like him as a reserve guy, but he's a restricted free agent. If the price is cheap enough, I could see him back, but I could also see the Packers maybe wanting to take somebody, in the draft late and just move on. I doubt Green Bay does much at this position in the offseason. With the money they've already invested in Campbell and the first-round pick status of Quay Walker, they're not going to do much. Again, other than maybe adding a guy late in the draft if they decide they'd like to move on from Barnes or he gets signed elsewhere. Okay, front 7 in the books in under 30 minutes. Not bad, Lamps. I was worried about how long the show was going to be because there's a lot to talk about, but we're moving along. We're clipping along. We're moving on a pretty good clip here. All right, not bad, not bad. So let's move to the back end now and talk about the Packers secondary. A group that we had high hopes for, high expectations for heading into the season, and a group that obviously disappointed, to say the least. Start at corner. Headliner here, Jaire Alexander. My guy, Ja Money. You know, look, for a guy who took as much heat as he did from some pockets of this fan base this past season, you'd think he had just a terrible year, like a dog shit year. And he didn't at all. I mean, he was voted both second team All-Pro into the Pro Bowl team. He had 5 picks and defended 14 passes, both team highs, and the 5 picks were a career high for him. You know? When Ja was allowed to play to his strengths, Journal Sentinel, I believe it was, or Packers News wrote about this last week, when he was allowed to play press coverage, man coverage, he was mostly fantastic. How about that? Who could have ever guessed that except everyone? You know, yeah, he had some rough moments. Got burned a few times that he normally hadn't. Got burned, you know, a few times that he normally hadn't in the past. Got burned by things he hadn't normally been in the past. There we go. But over the course of 17 games, those moments were outweighed by a mountain of good moments. You know, comparing the good and the bad, it's not even close. People are crazy. Some of the stuff I saw people directing at Ja, crazy. I still think he's a borderline top 5 corner in the game, top 10 at worst. And he turns just 26 next month. So thankfully, he'll be around a while. I think part of the problem with Ja was his focus waned at times because he, as much or more than anybody, probably more than anybody else in that defense, really seemed to not believe in Joe Barry. And the reality is, if a football player doesn't believe in his coordinator, you know, stuff like this can happen. I think that was a big part of the problem for Ja. So hopefully, now Barry's coming back, but hopefully he works on that and, you know, has a little bit more of a consistent season next year, but I still thought he was very good last year. Unfortunately, the guy who was supposed to be his running mate at corner, Eric Stokes, he did not have such a good season. Woof. Stokes only played 9 games before his season ended as a result of knee/ankle injuries. And in those 9 games, what we saw was not pretty. Simply put, Stokes got beat. He just got beat far too often. For a guy who played so well as a rookie in 2021. Man, didn't you think at the end of his rookie year, like, holy shit. When Ja comes back next year fully healthy, we're going to have a lockdown tandem. Stokes was fantastic last year in 2021. He was terrible this past season. You know, his play was kind of symbolic of the defense as a whole, really. A guy who was supposed to make a leap and become elite did anything but. So here's a telling stat for Stokes. Ready for this? In 16 games as a rookie, he defended 14 passes. In 9 games this year, none. None! How does he not defend a single pass? How does one not bonk off your head or your shoulder pads by accident? I don't know, but it didn't happen. Need I say more? You know, he's going to need to step it back up big, big, big time in 2023. Absolutely. And if it's easy to judge the respective seasons had by John Stokes, for me anyways, it's a little harder to do so for Roswell Douglas. On the surface, just looking at stats, he played pretty well. Defended 13 passes. Only one behind Ja for the team lead. Picked off 4 passes. Again, only one behind Ja. 1 fumble force, 1 fumble recovery. I mean, those are good stats. And at times, his play reflected those numbers. He could certainly blanket receivers, make those plays, make the big plays. I like the attitude he brings to the team. Those are all good things. But there were moments where he just looked a step slow. Just not quite able to hang with whoever he was covering. Kind of saw that throughout the year, too. So overall, I'd say an up and down year for him. Slightly more ups than downs. So that's positive. Seen some suggest he could be cut for cap reasons, but I doubt that. There's too much uncertainty with Stokes going into year 3. They'll keep Douglas. They'll probably do some salary maneuvering with him, but he'll be back. Yeah. From there, with Stokes injured and his play at safety, well, yikes. Packers ended up moving Darnell Savage to the slot corner spot late in the year. More on him in a bit. Kayshon Nixon, a lot more on him in a little bit, too. Saw some time at corner and actually played better than I thought he would there. Even picked off a pass. Pleasantly surprised with Nixon when he was forced into corner duty. I thought Shamar Jean Charles would see more time there. He only ended up playing 6 games and did nothing. Now, depending on where they want to play Savage going forward, I could see Green Bay targeting this position in the draft. I don't think they'll do it in the first 2 days. But once we get into day three, I could definitely see them take a corner or maybe even two. Always good to replenish your depth there, I think. That's a spot you always want to have guys coming in, I think. One spot Green Bay will have to address high, transition A+, Chris, and maybe multiple times in the draft, is safety. Simply put, the position was a complete and total disaster for the Packers this season. And it was a huge reason the defense was so crushingly disappointing. Oh, the safety play was ass. Let's start with Adrian Amos. No nice way to say it. Dude isn't totally washed up yet, but he's getting there. Yeah. Yeah, he's nearing the shore. He's nearing the shoreline. Second on the team with 102 tackles, but just didn't do much in the way of impact plays, I thought, you know? Seven tackles for loss. Tied for second on the team. So you'd see it in, like, in little flashes, but not nearly enough. Far more often he was a step slow or a step behind whoever he was covering or wherever he was trying to get to. Only defended 5 passes. That number has dipped in each of the last 2 seasons for him now. Just feels like he's not a guy you can count on anymore. You know? He was a reliable player, and watching him last season, I kept thinking, that's just not the case anymore with this dude. He's a free agent to be in since he's turning 30 in April. I don't think he fits with this team's timeline at all. I'd be shocked if he's back. Yeah. And I think it's best to move on. Will Savage be back? That's a very good question. Packers picked up his 5th-year option. So he's on the books for a guaranteed $7.9 million. That number is there no matter what, folks. If they cut him, it's $7.9 million. Doesn't matter. Could they trade him? Seen some people suggest that? I guess, but what's his market? Look, I admit I whiffed on Savage. I thought he was going to have a big year in what was essentially a contract year for him. That didn't happen. He was consistently beat, consistently out of position, and just looked lost and kind of clueless a lot of the time. And for a guy who's played as much ball as he's played, that's just inexcusable, you know? He ends up getting benched and moved to slot corner, but then played some safety again late in the year once Rudy Ford got benched. Thought he looked a little bit better towards the end of the year for whatever that's worth. I know some people are going to hate this. If I had to guess, I would guess the Packers give him a 1-year extension, signing him through 2024. What was he done to deserve that? Hang on. By doing that, they would greatly lower his cap number next year, essentially giving him one more shot in Green Bay. And if he whiffs, the Packers can cut him next spring, and my guess is the contract will be structured so they won't take much of a hit. Because they're going to take a $7.9 million hit if they get rid of him right now. Yeah, they can't do that. They can't afford it. So if you extend him by a year, you lower everything, lowers the stakes, you get one more shot to see if he can pull it all together. You know, with a new secondary coach, a new DBs coach, as Jerry Gray just left to go to, what, Atlanta? You know, you give him one more shot. And if he has a big year next year, they can extend him next spring, right? So there's flexibility in giving him that extension. It seems like, at first glance, when you hear that, you're like, what the hell? But when you think about it, it makes sense. And I think that's what they're going to do. Speaking of Ford, he came in with a bang at safety. Replacing Savage for the Dallas game, picking off Dak Prescott twice. It was like, whoa! I was watching that game in the hotel room at Marquette. And Marquette, if you remember, I did the podcast that night from the hotel bathroom. Which, if you ever doubt how much I love you guys, I did a podcast from a goddamn hotel bathroom. That's how much I love you guys, how much I care about getting this show to you. I'm going to pat myself on the back for that. All I had was a chair that I wheeled in from the desk, a couple of tall boys, a Labatt, and just guts. That's how I did it, baby. You know, felt like it really, I was like, wow, maybe Green Bay lucked out before, but it was pretty much all downhill for him after that, and he was eventually benched late in the year as they put Savage back out there. I think Ford's got real value as a special teamer, more on that in a bit, and as a backup safety, a guy who you can kind of rotate in and out a little bit in certain formations, but no, he's not any kind of long-term solution, not at all. Nor are any of Green Bay's other options like Tariq Carpenter or Dallin Leavitt, so they're special teams guys. The Packers are, they're going to have to address this position in a major way in the draft. Yeah. You'll notice I'm not saying free agency at all because they're not going to have any money to really get any difference makers at any spot. They're going to have to do, this is all going to be via the draft, or mostly, folks. And they're going to have to address safety in a major way, yeah. You know, even if they want to roll the dice with Savage one more time as one of the starters, which I could see happening, they'll have to take a guy probably high, probably within the first couple rounds, certainly by the end of day two. Now, if they want to address it in round one, maybe someone like Alabama's Brian Branch, maybe someone like Texas A&M's Antonio Johnson could be interesting fits. A couple of day two guys I like are Georgia's Christopher Smith and Illinois' Sidney Brown. I think both those guys would be nice fits. It's a good safety draft, I think, overall. So that's good for the Packers, you know? They have needs of tight end. It looks like it's going to be a good tight end draft. Safety is a big need. It looks like it's a good safety draft. So that lines up well. But yeah, either way, they need to shore up this position big time. So that's the defense. All right, let's talk special teams. Who is ready to talk special teams? Show of hands. No one? Okay, I'm just kidding. Actually, the special teams were improved. Definitely improved in the first year under coordinator Rich Bisaccia. Packers jumped from 32nd to 22nd in Rick Goslin's annual special teams rankings. So yeah, that's a solid jump. They went from shitty to only occasionally shitty, I'd say. The coverage units, you got to make yourself laugh sometimes, right? The coverage units were better. The return units were better. And yeah, things just felt overall cleaner and more professional. Didn't it just feel like a more professionally run operation with Rich? As opposed to the rotating clown show that we've had back there for the past 1,000 years at that coordinator spot. So much more professional, like a professional special teams unit. Now, they still had too many punts and kicks blocked. In fact, they had 4 blocked overall, worst in the league in Goslin's rankings. And had Bisaccia not foolishly stuck with Amari Rodgers on punt returns for so long, this group may have finished even higher. They probably would have. Now, major credit, I got to give major credit to Brian Gutekunst for the coverage and blocking units in particular. He made the return blocking units, I mean. He made a concerted effort to improve things after the playoff disaster against San Francisco last winter, and he did just that. First by hiring Bisaccia, of course, but then by bringing in experienced special teamers like Levitt and Ford. Hold on a second here. What's going on here? There we go. You know, brought in Levitt, brought in Ford. Then he signs Eric Wilson off New Orleans practice squad in early October. Those guys all proved to be quite valuable, right? And hopefully Goot will be able to bring all or at least most of them back as they are all impending free agents, all the guys I just listed. Imagine that. You go out and get a bunch of experienced, solid special teams guys and your special teams gets better. What a shock. It's almost like some of us have been screaming for that for years. One other impending free agent he absolutely positively has to bring back is Keyshawn freaking Nixon. I wanted to say that loud for emphasis. The Packers, folks, the Green Bay Packers. Yes, you heard that correctly. Not another team. The Green Bay Packers had a first-team all-pro returner. If that seemed like the impossible dream, it's impossible no more. The list of Nixon's accomplishments last season is frankly astounding. And you know what? This is from an article on the Packer Wire site written by Zach Cruz. Probably know him on Twitter. Zach wrote it better than I can say it, so I'm just going to quote Zach's article here. Nixon, who was signed by the Packers in March, led the NFL in kickoff returns, kickoff return yards, and kickoff returns of at least 50 yards. He had 2 returns over 90 yards, including a 105-yard touchdown, the longest return in the NFL this season. Now, this is me talking. That was obviously the one against the Vikings on New Year's Day. Nixon didn't become the full-time kickoff returner until late October, but he still returned 35 kickoffs for 1,009 yards. He was the only NFL player with over 1,000 kickoff return yards this season. There's more here from Zach's article. Nixon's kickoff return average of 28.8 yards ranked 2nd in the NFL. He was one of only 5 players to return a kickoff for a touchdown. Over the final eight games of 2022, he produced 100 or more kickoff return yards eight times, including four straight times between weeks 10 and 13. He created 11 kickoffs. Nixon created 11 kickoff returns of 30 or more yards. That's really well written by Zach. Zach's a good writer. And, you know, I was trying to figure out a way to say it, and then I stumbled upon his article, and I was going like, "This, I can't say it any better than this. Fuck, I'm just going to quote him." But attributed it properly, of course. I mean, when you hear all that, you're just completely blown away, aren't you? He became a real field-tilting weapon for the Packers. The kind of guy they haven't had in years. Their best returner since Desmond Howard. Yep, I think we can say that safely now. Absolutely. He only turns 26 in June, and he must be re-signed. It simply must happen. They cannot let him walk. They cannot. They will regret it for a long time if they do. Do not screw this up. And I have faith that he won't. Let's move on to someone I sort of doubt will be back. That's kicker Mason Crosby. So here's the good. Crosby had a major bounce-back season in 2022, connecting on just over 86% of his field goal attempts, up from 73.5% of his kicks in 2021. So was that 12.5% improvement? That's damn good. And from 49 yards in, he was basically automatic, incredibly reliable, connecting on 24 of 25 attempts. So that's the good. Here's the problem. It's become clear Green Bay just doesn't trust him from any further out than that, only giving him four shots from 50 yards or longer this season. That sort of thing, folks, can have an effect on play calling in that part of the field if you don't trust your kicker from long distances. It can get you into a bind, you know? And I mean, look, Crosby, the facts, you know, turns 39 in September. He's an impending free agent. And even with all of his limitations, if the Packers were to bring him back, it won't be cheap. No, no, no. And with where the Packers are, especially if they do move on from Rodgers, I feel like it's the right time to move on from Crosby and find a younger guy to handle the kicking, a guy who, you know, if he's good, will be around for a long time. I love Crosby. Hell, we all do. God, we've been through a lot with that dude, good and bad. And he's had an amazing run, right? No other way to slice it. An amazing run. But it just doesn't feel like it's the right time to do this. I think it is. And I think the holding abilities of punter Pat O'Donnell had a large part in Crosby's bounce back last season. And that might be a big reason why O'Donnell's back next year. Because his actual punting, well, it's pretty hit and miss. I mean, go look at his numbers. He was middle of the pack to bottom of the pack in pretty much every major category. Now, I don't think he was terrible, but it was pretty mid, as the kids like to say. As the youths like to say. But his holding and his ability to not completely suck in cold weather probably keep him around for one more year despite his $2.3 million cap hit. But I'll say this, if they did cut him and go younger and cheaper there, I wouldn't be shocked. No. But I do think he'll be back. And let's close this out. What the hell? Let's finish this fucker off by talking about long snapper Jack Coco. Do all the other podcasts talk about the long snapper? I bet they don't. This one does. A little bit. I thought his snaps were pretty spotty throughout the year. Some good, but there were some real rough ones. And I thought O'Donnell bailed him out on more than one occasion. More than two occasions. More than probably five or six occasions. You know? Maybe upgrade there. Why not? That's it. That's all I'm saying about the long snapper. But that's more than a lot of people say, I bet. Oh, yeah. So, all right. That's it. That finally, perhaps mercifully, wraps up this episode of Lamps Talking Pack, this two-part series. God, I hope you had as much fun listening to these last two episodes as I did recording them. It was quite a bit of work to compile all this, you know, for this series, but it was a blast. It really was. I can't lie. I honestly had a great time. I hope you did too. We move on now fully into the offseason, and obviously the first major domino to fall will be the Aaron Rodgers domino. What happens there will determine all or most of what happens after that. I hope the Packers can trade him. As I've said multiple times on the show over the past you know, year and change. I think it's time for this to happen. I really do. I think it's time to toss the keys to Jordan Love and move into a new era. But we'll see what happens. Regardless of who's under center for Green Bay, they have clear needs at the skill position spots on offense. Particularly wide receiver and tight end. That is the top need. Again, Gutekunst cannot simply rely on, well, we got Watson and Dobbs and we're okay at wide receiver. That's a huge mistake, right? We love Watson and Dobbs. But look, Watson had a lot of injury stuff throughout the year. Dobbs had some injury stuff. You've got to keep reloading there. More. Whoop, third burp. Got to keep it real a third time. it's this damn pasta sauce we had for dinner tonight, I tell you. You know, you look again. Look at these teams. Look at Cincinnati. Look at KC. Look at Philly. Look at the four teams playing today. San Francisco. Cincy, they're teams that were loaded with weapons at those positions. Very important. It's the top need for the Packers. More than anything else. But safety is close behind. Safety is the number two need, absolutely. They've got to get things shored up on the back end. You know, right? Terrible safety play was a huge reason why the defense sucked as a whole last year. I really believe that. Got to get things right there. And then after that, I would say defensive line and edge rusher, or vice versa, edge rusher and defensive line. Those are probably the next highest needs on the list. So, yeah. I think those are the main areas they have to address. And it's going to be very... I know this. It'll be really interesting to see what they do. Because they're not going to have a lot of cap space. They might be able to snag a veteran or two on the cheap. But most of this is going to happen through the draft. That much I am sure of. As for when you'll hear from me next, that I'm not sure of. Honestly, I don't know. I would guess once something happens with Rodgers, that'll probably be the next time I jump back on here or when some other bit of breaking news occurs. Not sure if you will before that, really, because I don't do much with the Combine. I mean, I watch it, but I've never really done shows about it. I don't think that's going to change this year. We know Rodgers has said he'll decide on his future before free agency, which is in mid-March. So probably we'll know something by late February or early March, I hope. And I'm guessing that'll be when you hear from me next. But you never know. I may get the itch to jump back on here sooner, so keep your eyes and your ears open for that. And if I am back earlier, of course, I'll let you know. So until next time, whenever that may be, I am Chris Lempesis. This has been Lemp's Talkin' Pack. Thank you so very much for listening, Packer Nation. I love you, I love you, I love you. Please stay safe out there in this crazy world, and remember, always and forever, go, Pack, go.